Joining us today to help take your calls is Dr. Joshua Barocas of Boston Medical Center and the Boston University School of Medicine. Welcome back, Dr. Barocas.
Thanks for having me.
And Dr. Helen Boucher, Chief of the Division of Geographic Medicine and Infectious Diseases at Tufts Medical Center. She's also the Treasurer of the Infectious Diseases Society of America. Welcome back to you too, Dr. Boucher.
Thanks for having me.
And again, listeners, that number for your questions is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. As people begin calling in, I do have a couple questions I'd like to ask the two of you first. There's some new CDC data that found that out of the U.S. cases from mid-February to March, 38% of those sick enough to be hospitalized were actually younger than 55. That seems to run counter to some early messaging that older adults were quite vulnerable and younger people, especially millennials, let's say, were fairly safe and immune. Has that been wrong? Is that not the case? Are we learning something different now? Maybe Dr. Barocas, can you answer?
So what I'll say is I think that what this highlights is the importance, and we've said this before on the program, both of us, I believe, have, that this really gets at the heart of physical distancing. You know, I believe that our messaging has been very clearly heard by a lot of the population, which is stay home, don't interact. But what we really need, what this is showing us, is that really we need to help target and help educate some of our younger population because they are at risk. This is a virus that, and just like any other virus, can change and it can affect people differently. We're learning new things every day thanks to the sharing of data from Italy and China and other countries that have been heavily affected. And so as we take in all that new data, the best thing that we can tell people to do is really, truly stay at home because this is an evolving situation.
And Dr. Boucher, as we've had physicians practicing in hospitals on these panels, we're constantly trying to gauge how bad is it in the hospital. So at Tufts Medical Center, does that reflect what we've been hearing there, you know, shortages of supplies, concerns about overwhelm of the number of beds? You know, we know that the head of Mass General today asked 3D printing companies to begin trying to print 3D masks, for example. So how bad is it at Tufts Medical Center right now?
Well, so I think, you know, the good news is that we've been preparing for many weeks and that we have a stockpile of supplies. I think the concerns that all of us share in all of our institutions here in Massachusetts and really across the country is that this supply is not endless and that we need to be prepared for a real influx of patients for a significant period of time. And so we're all thinking as creatively as possible and in community as much as possible about ways to be the most prepared. And so it's really gratifying to see these creative you know, potential solutions being explored early in the epidemic while there's time to pursue them. And I think, you know, we're working at the local level with things like individual potential solutions, but also at the city, state, and national level to, you know, try to influence our legislators and others to help us have access to the very important supplies that we need to protect our patients.
So our lines are filling up. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK if you have a question today for our panelists. Gordon's on the line from Concord. Gordon, please go ahead.
Thank you. My question is this. My 21-year-old niece on Saturday is returning from Sydney, Australia, where she's studying abroad. She's returning to a household that includes her 57-year-old mom, who's a type 1 diabetic, her 66-year-old uncle, who is recovering from a stroke, and her grandmother, who is 88 years old. All three are vulnerable, obviously. Is it safe for her to come into that home?
Great question, Gordon. Dr. Barocas?
So at this point, what I think many of us would recommend is as you are able to have returning travelers, because we're trying to understand asymptomatic transmission, the best thing to do is to have that family member either somewhere else for an observation period, a quarantined observation period, or if that's not possible, then to do the best possible job at separating her from the rest of the family.
So first choice is don't come back to the house, it sounds like. Second choice is isolate in the house. Is that right?
That's exactly right. I mean, we understand that this is posing a hardship on a lot of families, and this does not, and my thoughts don't necessarily mean that I'm ignoring the limitations of family structures, but to the best extent possible, yes, it would be best if a returning traveler would go somewhere aside from the house, and if not, then isolate themselves.
That's really helpful. Let's take another call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Deanne's on the line from Watertown. Deanne, what's your question?
My question is this. So we know that this virus spreads airborne. So my question is, if it's airborne, and then we know these public places like grocery stores and the medical stores, can they make sure the ventilation is all ventilated better? Like maybe even opening the doors and leaving the doors open, I feel that it's much more ventilated than leaving the doors closed.
What about that, Dr. Boucher? What about, you know, grocery stores leaving the doors open, opening windows? I know it's cooler weather, but it is warming up. Does that level of increased ventilation make a difference, and is something like that important to do?
Well, great question. So just to clarify, this virus is actually spread by what we call droplets, like influenza. That's why we have the recommendations for keeping that distance to more than 6 feet, because we know that the droplets spread in a mostly 3 but up to 6 foot radius of where we're standing. So it's actually not airborne. It's not like tuberculosis. So that's an important thing to think about as we look at this. And then I think in general, you know, fresh air is a good thing, and, you know, wiping down surfaces, washing our hands, all the procedures that we've been talking about are very, very important for preventing spread of the virus.
We have Judy on the line from West Newbury. Judy, go ahead.
Thank you. I'm just curious as to whether when people seemingly healthy test positive for the virus, are they just testing the colonization in the nose, or do people actually have the virus, are asymptomatic, and develop antibodies?
And Dr. Barocas?
I'll take my answer later.
Yeah, that's a great question. So, I love the discussion about colonization. At this point, we don't believe that if you're testing positive, that it's something such as colonization. And for a lot of the listeners, what that means is bacteria and are oftentimes are always living on our skin and our upper respiratory tracts, many places, and we live with them in a very nice and harmonious way most of the time. We don't believe at this point, and at least what I've seen, that there's necessarily colonization, that it's living with us harmoniously. So if you're getting swabbed, even if you're asymptomatic, then that would mean that you have an infection. It may be very mild. It also may be so mild that it's what we would call subclinical. But just like anything, there is a spectrum of disease. So it can be anything from asymptomatic to severely ill. So if you have gotten a test and it has become positive for COVID-19, then you can assume that you are infected and need to be isolated.
So to briefly follow up on that before we take our next call, how long can someone be asymptomatic? Have it and be asymptomatic.
So the best data that we have so far, and if Dr. Boucher knows anything that I don't, I'm always ears to her. But as far as I know, you can be asymptomatic for the duration of what we would consider the illness, but you can also be asymptomatic before you start showing signs. That asymptomatic period can be up to and even longer than 5 days. And we know that people in general with a mild disease, once you've been diagnosed and you have some symptoms, you can be you're shedding your virus for upwards of 14 and in some cases longer days beyond that.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK if you have a question for the panel. We've got Stephanie on the line from Wakefield.
Hi, yes. My question is in regards to smoking. We hear a lot of information about modifiable risks, about, you know, social distancing and whatnot. And yet there seems to be very little in the public about the modifiable risk of smoking. We know that smoking is a risk factor, not a risk factor, but patients do worse who are smokers. And we know that, you know, if you do quit or reduce your smoking, that you'll see improvements in lung function within a month. And yet, as I said, there's very little in the news and the public service.
So let's turn that to Dr. Boucher, Helen, Stephanie. I understand your question. Dr. Boucher, what about what Stephanie's saying?
Yeah, it's a great point, certainly. Smoking is bad, and we know that in China, at least from the data from China, that smoking was a risk factor in many of the people who did badly with this virus. So I absolutely support any and all endeavors to get people to quit smoking and to think about the negative effects of smoking, because smokers will not do as well with this virus like many other diseases.
1-800-423-8255 or 1-800-423-TALK. Nora is on the line from New Bedford. Nora, go ahead.
I was wondering why should the U.S. close schools if the U.K. isn't closing schools?
It's a great question, Nora. It sounds like you are in school yourself. Is your school closed?
Yes.
Yeah, right, because they all are now. Okay, let's go to Dr. Barocas, and see if he's got an answer for you.
So every decision is obviously has to be weighed on a city-by-city, state-by-state, and even country-by-country basis. At this point, where we are in our virus, and I can't speak for the United Kingdom, where we are in the epidemiology and the spread of our virus and how the number of cases that we know that closing schools for at least a period of time, which will encourage what we call physical distancing or social distancing, is going to help stop the spread through our communities. Remember, Nora, a lot of teachers and kids are also struggling with various diseases that put them at risk. And so part of this is being a member of the community and making sure that our community as a whole is safe. And that's what closing the schools is meant to do.
Let's take a call from Cindy in Dedham. Cindy, please go ahead. What's your question?
Hi. Thanks for this program. The question I had to do with more on the positive side. If people come through this individually, having survived it or been exposed and showing no symptoms, have they developed an immunity to the virus automatically? I don't know, just if they're exposed again, are they immune, or
great question.
How does that process happen?
Dr. Boucher.
Yeah, it's a great question. And the good news is that the data that we've seen so far, and again, we're still learning a lot about this virus, but the data that we've seen so far shows that people do develop immunity, and that's partly how we know about this percentage of people who have extremely mild or no disease, is because we find antibodies in those people, so we know they've been exposed and developed immunity, and we have signs that immunity is what we call protective, and that it lasts for a long time, so that's a good thing, and we look forward to learning more about it. There are a lot of people studying this quite intensively right now.
Jessica's on the line from Topsfield. Jessica, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. My question is, can a vinegar and water solution be effective in disinfecting surfaces that may have been touched by the virus?
Great question. Dr. Barocas.
You know, I have not looked into that, and I know that there are a lot of solutions out there. We have been recommending a bleach-based solution, but I'm going to ask if Dr. not to put her on the spot, but Dr. Boucher,
let's
do
turn
you know?
To you, Dr. Boucher. I don't know either. How about you,
put
Dr.
Me on
Boucher?
The spot. So my understanding is that standard cleaners that we use at home and in the hospital work. I have not specifically seen vinegar listed as an ingredient, but again, the recommendations from the CDC say that standard cleaners for our homes and the hospital work fine for this virus.
Any standard cleaning product that you would use at another time.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay, that's really helpful. Let's see if we can get one more. We've got Gina on the line from North Reading. Gina, go ahead.
Hi there. My question is about the exposed produce in grocery stores and whether, say, somebody sneezes over the broccoli, can the virus live on the food?
Okay. Dr. Barocas or Boucher, either one.
Well, I can start and try to answer. So we have some newer data saying how long the virus can live on surfaces. And we do know that it can survive on certain surfaces and in the air for a number of hours. So what I would say, we all have to have food and, you know, we all have to go to the grocery store. As you're going to the grocery store, make sure that you're wiping down the cart or the basket as you're walking in. Anything that you're grabbing, such as the exposed fruit or exposed vegetables, make sure that you're cleaning that really well before you eat it. And obviously, when you get home, I do want to just make sure everybody hears you have to wash your hands for your two ABC songs, as we say to my two kids. But yes, it can, and I would encourage you to wash that produce.
This has been Dr. Joshua Barocas of Boston Medical Center and the Boston University School of Medicine. Thanks, Dr. Barocas.
Always a pleasure.
And Dr. Helen Boucher, Chief of the Division of Geographic Medicine and Infectious Diseases at Tufts Medical Center. Thanks so much, Dr. Boucher.
Thank you for having me.
And stay with us. Coming up, what we can learn from another pandemic more than 100 years ago.